It's been exactly 3 weeks, nearly to the hour, since 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz stormed into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. He killed 17 people with a semi-automatic rifle that he bought legally. Within days, surviving students launched a movement which they called Never Again to pressure state and federal officials to pass tougher gun control laws. School shootings are tragically common, but this student movement is unprecedented. Journalist Emily Witt has been reporting on it extensively for The New Yorker. She just returned from Parkland, and she's here in studio today. Emily, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
So, Emily, the leaders of Never Again are quickly becoming household names, but let's remind listeners of who the core group is.
Sure. The core group of students really started and came together in the first couple days after the shooting happened. They were there was a student named Cameron Caskey who started posting about gun control very quickly on social media, and then was interviewed in the national media and the national news. And the night after the shooting, he invited some friends over from his house, most of them from his drama club. And they came up with the name Never Again. They launched social media pages, and they began developing an activist platform about gun control.
Hey, Cameron told you, I'm a talker. The only thing I've had this whole time is the fact that I never shut up. So he's definitely not camera shy and seems like the kind of personality that could sort of have people coalesce around him, yeah?
Yeah, he's that kind of guy who's good at telling people what to do, maybe, or at least getting a group together. I could have seen him doing that in school theater as much as in this movement that happened upon them.
And if nothing else, high school is a composition of different tribes, right? So do you feel like, Cameron, is this group coalesced outside of that sort of initial tribe of the drama club and the newspapers?
Yeah, for sure. So as he was gathering his friends, other students were starting to speak in the media as well. One of them was David Hogg, a school newspaper reporter. Another was a student named Emma Gonzalez. The junior class president, whose name was Jacqueline Corin, was also giving interviews and very quickly began organizing a trip to Tallahassee. And by 3 or 4 days after the shooting, they'd all decided to unite under the same umbrella to be more effective.
And we're talking about students that were born after Columbine, and they came of age during an era of mass shooting. How has that shaped them? How were you able to tell that shaped them?
Yeah, I mean, they've grown up with this threat as a reality. They've had, you know, drills at school. They actually never had an actual code red drill, but certainly it had been discussed, and they knew of the possibility, of course. And not only that, it was something they studied in school. I spoke with an AP government teacher named Jeffrey Foster. Many of the student leaders were in his class. And this was, gun control was an issue that they debated, they learned about. They learned about special interest groups like the NRA. One student, Jacqueline Corin, had written a 50-page paper for another class about the issue, weighing the different pros and cons and viewpoints. And so this was something that was, you know, they probably know more about than many adults. And also something that, unlike people of an older generation, they don't see as a kind of, lightning bolt type event that comes from nowhere. They see it as a direct result of decisions and policies made by voters and politicians.
It's interesting to me that this was sort of the reality they grew up in, which you could think would lead down the other road where it's something they're sort of inured to, but it's the exact opposite. Is that because of the instruction? Is that because of the AP instructor, you think, or that sort of rigorous scholarly environment?
I mean, I think it really is because they had to hide in a closet while somebody was shooting a machine gun on the other side of campus. I mean, I think it was abstract to them until it became very, very real. And what's amazing is how quickly they could convert that experience and that fear into a call for action.
I'm D.W. Gibson, speaking with Emily Witt about her coverage of the Parkland shooting. Let's talk about Emma Gonzalez, one of the Never Again leaders. We have a clip, actually, of her on the Ellen DeGeneres show about why this, talking about why this movement is different. Let's hear that.
Everybody's listening to us. The difference is you've seen this. We're here. We're talking to you right now. This has never happened before. Those kids in previous shootings like Sandy Hook, they were so young, and many of them did not make it out to tell their tale. And we are thankful enough to have been in a school that educated us almost perfectly to handle this situation.
Her speech calling out politicians' BS after the shooting went viral, and she's been getting a lot of attention. It's easy to hear a lot of the emotion and the energy in her voice there. Tell us a little bit about what she's like.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw her again on Friday. Some of the students have been going to D.C. and doing the talk show circuit. She's actually stayed in Parkland, and she's focused her energy recently on recruiting students from the high school to go to the march and also forming alliances with kids from other high schools, which is a big focus of theirs. And she, you know, when you hear a speech like that or you hear a quote like that, she comes off as so grown up, so, you know, just like, yeah, she sounds like an adult, you know, and she is a senior. But when I met her in person, I'm also reminded that, this is somebody that clearly really cares about her friends, cares about her school. She's still a teenager. She's a passionate teenager with firm convictions, but she's also like a caring, fun kid who cares about her friends, right.
I thought it was interesting that she joined Twitter after the shooting and she got more than 1 million followers in less than 3 weeks. So what's her social presence like now? How does she translate all this into that world?
Yeah, it's funny. I was sitting there as she signed up for Twitter and, Emma for Change spelled out was taken. So she had to use the number 4. And then, within days, she had that many followers. It's really amazing. But no, I mean, like when I asked her how it was to go back to school, again, the day I saw her was the day there was that shooting at Central Michigan University.
Right.
And so what she said is that it was nice to be back at school while that happened, because instead of having to drive to her friend's house to process that emotional upheaval again, they could just walk down the hall and hug each other. So again, I think her world, despite being this national figure now, her world is still very much about school and her community and her friends.
What is she tweeting about? How is she utilizing that instrument?
She tweets about, she responds to critics.
Uh-huh.
The students have been very clever about, making jokes about right-wing critics that claim they're actors or claim they're not who they say they are or claim they're being used by politicians or older people. So she tweets about that, but I think if part of the reason people follow her on Twitter is she's also very, she understands gun policy. All these students have now, they understood it probably to a certain extent before, but now you can ask them almost anything about gun laws and they'll be able to tell you the pros and cons of particular policies. And so as people are presenting different solutions to this, she's a very informed, critical voice.
Mm-hmm. David Hogg is one of the students that's involved in this core group. He's this, incidentally, his dad is a retired FBI agent, if I have that correct. And he's one of the ones that after the shooting was accused of being a crisis actor. So how did he handle that direct accusation?
Again, just with sarcasm. He's, he's not a crisis actor. He's just a kid. I don't know specifically how he addressed that so much as just they've all been rolling their eyes. I saw a tweet from Cameron Caskey the other day. Somebody had photoshopped a picture of him and David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez as the Three Stooges. And Caskey joked that they'd had to Photoshop Emma's and David's faces to look goofy, but his own face was just goofy as was. So they're treating this with a sense of humor, even though it is dark.
Right. By the weekend after the shooting, the movement had a name, it had a policy goal, and a plan for the nationwide protest on March 24th. So walk us through how that happened so very quickly.
Yeah. So from that first night of the candlelight vigil, the day after the shooting, when they gathered together and they stayed up really late, you know, the next day, let me see, was Friday. So they were giving interviews in the media. The day after that was the day that Emma, there was a rally in Fort Lauderdale, a gun control rally. And that's where Emma gave the speech that went viral, the We Call BS mm-hmm. speech. And that night, they all stayed over. Cameron Caskey had a little slumber party, and they stayed over, and they, you know, kind of came to an agreement that they were all working together. And the next day, early in the afternoon, they sort of held their first press conference, which was really just them hanging out at picnic tables in a park. And as soon as the media, which was all there, heard that they were there, you know, they flocked to them. So mm-hmm. from there...
It was on Saturday night, right?
Yeah. That was on Sunday, I think. Okay. Yeah, afterward. And, you know, in the meantime, their voices had attracted the attention of Congressman Ted Deutch, mm-hmm. who represents that part of Broward County. And so he was meeting with them, Senator Bill Nelson meeting with them. The trip to Tallahassee had been planned to go meet with state lawmakers. So they were already spreading their message to the political side, too. The Republicans were a little bit slower to respond. But by Wednesday, CNN had this town hall. Marco Rubio was there. Florida Governor Rick Scott had also, you know, responded to their message. They really, they made it so that the issue of gun control could not be ignored. The politicians had to at least come out and talk about it and say something.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it's just been going forward. This past week, several of the students went to Washington, D.C., where they met with the Speaker of the House. They met with Nancy Pelosi and Bernie Sanders. They met with, politicians on both sides of the aisle. And they're very, you know, they understand that they can't, they're very pragmatic. They understand that certain politicians are not going to want to hear about an assault weapon ban or an AR-15
right.
ban. So to them, they you know, they'll talk about something like the Dickey Amendment, which is the rule that forbids the CDC from researching the effects
yeah.
of gun violence. So they really, you know, they know what's the right message for the right time. And they've also been very adamant that they have a message and a movement, and they're not the pawns of politicians. They're not there to endorse particular politicians or support them, and really that they'll talk to anybody who will listen.
And they come from a wealthy suburb, too, right? I mean, most of the students leading the movement are white. So what does that community's resources mean for organizing, for garnering support, in as much as you can tell?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. I mean, they go to a really, really good public school. It's mm-hmm. one of the best public schools in Florida. And they come from well-to-do families. I mean, just driving around Parkland, it's a community. It's, you know, it's gated communities, these like palm trees and canals. The streets are really clean and well-paved. There's parks. It's kind of this, it's like a suburb of a suburb with... Yeah, it's just really wholesome feeling.
So because of that wholesome feeling, because of the resources
yeah.
that are already there, do you think that sort of helps get the political clout or has helped get the political clout there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the students have said that they were inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear to me how quickly the politicians have responded to them versus how they've responded to that movement and other movements about gun violence. And it even caused me to think a lot about, I graduated from high school in 1999, which was the year Columbine happened. And
mm-hmm.
I'm from Minneapolis. I went to an urban public school in Minneapolis where we had some security. We had metal detectors at our dances, and several members of my graduating class died of gun violence outside of school. And those, you know, those deaths happen all over the country every day almost,
yeah.
and they're largely forgotten. And even this weekend when I was in South Florida, there was several, I don't know, three or four young people got into some kind of violent altercation and were injured. And, you know, that story was just news as usual instead right. of the outpouring of urgency you've seen around this shooting.
I'm D.W. Gibson, and I'm speaking with New Yorker contributor Emily Witt about the rise of the Never Again movement. Later on in the show, Jim and Jamie Dutcher talk about what they learned when they lived with a pack of wolves in Idaho for 6 years, plus Therese Marie Myatt with her memoir about growing up on the Seabird Island Indian Reservation in the Pacific Northwest. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break. I'm D.W. Gibson, speaking with Emily Witt, contributor to The New Yorker, about her coverage of the Parkland shooting. And, you know, I want to return to this issue we were talking about just before the break, about the resources that the community of Parkland has and how that might play into the responses they've been getting. There's been an outpouring of support for Parkland students, and it's a stark contrast to the lack of celebrity support and media attention given to Black and Brown students who have been the target of violence for gun violence for years. Is that on people's minds there? Is that something that's come up in your reporting?
Yeah, the students are very sensitive to that and aware of that criticism, or I don't know if it's criticism, observation. And this, I think especially, I anticipate that when they march, you will see people from different communities represented in the rally and speaking in the rally. Because I know this weekend, Emma Gonzalez had a group of students from Chicago over to her house just to strategize and discuss mm-hmm. things. It was closed to the media. And I know that they've been thinking about this issue a lot. They're, you know, they are aware of their privilege. It's something they're grateful that they have the chance to be heard in this way, but they're also aware that it's part of the reason people are listening is because of where they come from and the kind of school they went to.
And the week after the shooting, junior class president Jackie Corin organized a trip, as you mentioned, I think, to the State House in Tallahassee. And I want to hear a clip from Jackie on NBC days after the shooting talking about why they were headed to the Capitol.
We are the ones that looked into Nicholas Cruz's eyes, and we took 17 bullets to the heart, and we're the only ones that can speak up. We have to be the adults in this situation, because clearly people have failed us in the government, and we must make the change now, because we're the only ones that are going to.
We took 17 bullets to the heart. That's quite a phrase. So tell us about Jackie. How did she pull off this trip to Tallahassee?
I think she was connected through family friends to a state senator up there, but she had the idea on her own very quickly. And they chartered three buses. Students, they had an overwhelming number of students from the high school who wanted to join in on this. And they slept in the Civic Center. They were hosted and they were met and hosted up there by a local high school, Leon High School. Hmm. So it was very, you know, and they just went to try to meet with as many lawmakers as they could. In the end, they were a little bit frustrated with their reception.
How so?
Tallahassee is a very staid place. Mm-hmm. It's in North Florida. It feels very Southern. There's Spanish moss in the trees. It's a very traditional environment, very different from South Florida. And my impression, I went with them up there, and my impression was that the state legislators were not going to be disrupted or bothered by the sense of urgency the students had was not necessarily being shared by the legislature. And in the end, you know, they have been discussing a bill. I actually don't know the state of it at the moment, but the bill included, it didn't, you know, they obviously didn't ban AR-15 rifles right. in Florida, but it also included an amendment that would provide funding to arm teachers and create a kind of school marshal program, which is very contrary to the students' interest in the ones I talked to, at least. So,
what were the demands that they articulated on that trip?
Again, just, you know, they knew it was perhaps quixotic to demand a ban on AR-15, mm-hmm. but they want, you know, they want to close loopholes and background checks. They want universal background checks. They want to raise the age at which a person can buy an assault rifle to 21. Right now it's 18, which is, you can't buy a handgun when you're 18, but you can buy an AR-15.
Mm-hmm.
Florida has very draconian measures to discourage any gun control. So, for example, there's a law in Florida that if you're a local official and you propose, if you even just propose some kind of gun control law, you can be fined a civil fine of $5,000. So you personally get fined. You, the governor is allowed to remove you from office.
Tremendous.
What else is there? Oh, you are personally liable for the lawsuits that can be filed by, for example, Florida Carry. So your city attorney cannot fight those lawsuits for you. So these are really intense measures. And the students have been, Florida has a constitutional revision committee going around the state this year. So the students have been bringing that up to that committee. And also a city commissioner from the town of Coral Springs, which is next to Parkland, mm-hmm. is going to take on that law by passing a ban, I think, limiting sales of high-capacity magazines, I think, is what he's trying to do. So he's going to, you know, he's almost welcoming the lawsuit that will surely happen.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with New Yorker contributor Emily Witt about her coverage of the Parkland shooting. So, you know, when the students are formulating these demands, are they working in a bubble? Or are they getting input from teachers, from parents?
Yeah, they're getting input from teachers. You know, for example, I know their AP government teacher, this teacher, Jeffrey Foster, he isn't allowed to talk about it in class and stuff like that. But he has become the faculty liaison for students that do want to go to Washington. Their expenses will be paid to take the trip and all of that. So he's the person collecting the names and dealing with all of that. But really, you know, and they've had help on a national level from Dina Katz from the Women's March, is helping them organize the logistics of that. People who have experience organizing these kind of massive rallies. But really, really, it's them. I mean, every, you know, even arranging interviews, they have started to work with a PR firm just to organize the hundreds of requests for interviews they're getting. But you still, I don't know, you still can communicate with them directly. They're still, you know, yeah, it's all them. It's really them.
So the Never Again leaders, you know, they say their organizing is nonpartisan, and yet the NRA lobbying and gun control is clearly a partisan issue. So how is their movement reconciling this?
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, again, as I said, they are really, you know, Betsy DeVos came to their high school to visit yesterday. The students from the movement on Twitter were like, we're glad that she's coming. You know, we just want to talk as long, you know. Good for her for coming to listen. I mean, I don't know what that visit really amounted to, but for them, they're, you know, in speaking with Paul Ryan, again, they talked about the Dickey Amendment. They have smaller battles to fight that are not the major long-term goal of banning a gun like the AR-15, but, you know, little more bureaucratic issues. And, you know, and at the end of the day, not wanting a school shooting to happen is a nonpartisan issue. I think most adults in America can agree that that is a bad thing that we don't want to have to think about.
I would hope that's the case, but it seems like it's still a troublesome issue. You know, Emma Gonzalez said that she's been very clear on this. If a politician accepts blood money, as she puts it, i.e. money from NRA, you're going to be voted out of office. So it seems like in some ways they are embracing a political dimension to it, no?
Yeah, I mean, as an outsider, it's been a little bit sad to watch their idealism in confrontation with the political reality of the United States right now. They are talking a lot about midterm elections in Florida in particular, and that, you know, they will make sure that everybody in Florida knows who is not voting for gun control. And, you know, the NRA's power is really in its ability to mobilize a single issue voter base that really comes out very loyally. And if there's going to be a voter base on the other side, it will be because these students have organized it. But, you know, even when I think about the possibility of something like a ban on AR-15s, it's really hard to imagine. You know, I think the Democrats would have to control both houses of Congress and the presidency, and then there's the Supreme Court. So it's a very long road, and it's not, you know, it's a hard road.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've seen so many confrontations between national politicians, state politicians, and the movement. Marco Rubio, who you mentioned earlier, obviously had an infamous encounter. Do you think some politicians' futures are at stake because of this? And if so, who do you see at stake?
Yeah, at this point, that's very difficult to tell. That will depend on voters. And I do think that voters will be motivated by the lack of action on this issue. I think, you know, what the students brought into focus and clarity is that, again, these shootings don't happen by accident. They happen because of, like, very clear decisions about who can access what kind of guns and how those guns are sold and made available and all of that. And I do think, you know, in the last election, gun control was not an issue that people would go for the polls for, but I do think that now that has changed. And over the weekend, I actually went to a Democratic Party fundraiser in Broward County where some of the students were invited to speak. And it really felt like, you know, the students aren't there to support or endorse any candidate, but the candidates want their photo taken with the students.
Right.
And that means that, you know, they have captured the emotions and and frustration of voters, and the way that they speak cuts through a lot of bad faith arguments about gun control that have resulted in inaction for years.
Are they aware? Are the students aware of being sort of co-opted in that way for those photographs? And how are they handling that risk?
Yeah, I mean, they're very aware. One of them told me, you know, when they went to the Capitol, you know, they brought. When they spoke to Paul Ryan, they talked about one thing. When they spoke to the Democrats, one of the things that they said to them was, "We are not your pawns." Mm-hmm. A student said those words to me, and that, again, they see the issue as nonpartisan, and they're willing to work with anybody who will cooperate with them. And while some of the students actually do probably have long-term political aspirations, they're very ambitious young people, they, at this moment, care more about preventing this from happening again than they do about they're teenagers too. So an issue like health insurance, an issue like, I don't know, family leave, these aren't things that are on their mind just yet, I don't think. So right now, this is what they care about.
They haven't been made real like this issue. I mean, as you pointed out at the beginning of the interview, that's what is important here. Not that they studied it or became familiar with it through an AP class, but they encountered it.
Yeah.
It became a very real thing for them.
Exactly.
So in terms of their movement, is voter registration playing a part in terms of their efforts?
Yeah, especially with young people. And I think we'll see more of that as the year goes on. But, you know, they've all, especially the students that are already 18, they present themselves as voters. They talk a lot about the elections in the fall. They, you know, I think they will be leading a voter registration movement, I think, especially for young people.
Yeah. And you talked about trying to incorporate other communities, other kids across the country. And some of the leaders from the Never Again movement made a visit to Chicago recently, correct? What was that like and what was the point of that visit?
Oh, I actually don't know very well. Okay. I don't know about that one. But yeah, I know some students from Chicago came to Florida. But they didn't share very much about what that meeting was about. My guess is the students in the movement, some of them who haven't been like going and talking to politicians have really been doing a lot of Skype calls with schools all over the country, you know, making sure that there's a march happening in every city, in every state, sorry. And yeah, recruitment of other schools to their movement is a big part of what's been going on. And I think that has been very effective. I think at the march, we will see a lot of young people. It's going to be different from the Women's March. It's really the kids that are going to be there in force.
And you mentioned trying to have a march in every state. Tell us a little bit more about the specific plans for the March for Our Lives on March 24th. What are those parameters?
Yeah, I mean, right now, it's kind of straightforward. There's going to be a rally. The march goes down Pennsylvania Avenue with a rally, I think, in front of the Capitol. I'm not exactly sure, but the leaders will be speaking. Again, I think there are some families of the students that were killed will be speaking. And really, it's about proving to the country and to the media and to the NRA that the issue is not going to go away. They're not. This wasn't something that they want to fade from the news cycle and they're going to go to college and you'll never hear about it again. They're in this for the long haul. Every student I talked to said they are committed to this as a long-term life project, really.
Right. How in touch are you with the students now that they've started working with a PR firm? Has that changed your rapport with them?
Yeah, they're a little less. I mean, they're just really sought after by the media right now. But I was able to have a few conversations with them when I was there. You know, they have to be very careful right now because they're in, you know, I think how they see it right now is the words they want, that they've planned to say, that they want everybody to hear are going to be in the speeches they give at the rally. And the kind of off-the-cuff conversations and interviews that got them attention in the first place are not quite as necessary right now. They have social media. They have, you know, they're constantly producing stuff for social media. Like, I don't know if you saw, they made this video in response to the one Dana Loesch made, the NRA video.
I haven't yet, no.
So Dana Loesch, the spokesperson for the NRA, she made a video, this kind of vaguely threatening video.
Right, of course.
With an hourglass, yes. And she's talking about how biased the media is and the celebrities. And so the students made a kind of satirical send-up of that, starring a student named Sarah Chadwick, who was one of the, probably many people saw, she was one of the first people to reject Donald Trump's condolences and anger on Twitter. She, you know, she was like, I don't want your thoughts and prayers. Mm-hmm. We want action.
Well, to that point, you know, in the midst of this rapid response, all of the organizing, it's easy to lose track of the fact that they're still dealing, this horror is still very fresh. Tell us how they're sort of balancing that, sort of they're burying friends, they're going to funerals.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for the group I talked to, this is part of the way that they're processing their grief, but their grief is really real, and part of what they keep repeating, especially on social media, is that you can't really understand how scary and how horrible this is until you lose somebody to it. And there's one student in particular named Carly Novell who, she wrote a tweet, I don't remember the exact wording, but it was basically that it's important to remember that every person is a world. Every person has friends and family and aspirations and a history, and every one of those lives left behind a world. And, you know, the community in Parkland is just devastated. And you really, you know, this week when I was back, it really sunk in. At first, you know, there was a sense of emergency, but now being back, the media was mostly gone. You know, the memorials, the flowers are sort of decaying, and the finality of it really set in. And I don't even know how the kids are going back to school. They, you know, it's got to be really hard.
As Jackie put it, 17 bullets to the heart. I've been speaking with New Yorker contributor Emily Witt. Her latest book, her latest story is The Urgency and Frustration, The Never Again Movement Gains Momentum. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.